A4. Number 9B.
Another important point which we can now summarize is about the nature of ideas, that ideas are timeless and spaceless. Do you know what I mean? I mean by that ideas are actually the answer to the question of what is matter. Because the question of what is matter is a question that matter is something that happens within the time-space concept. Without time and space, we wouldn't have any concept of matter. That's how far physicists have come, that matter can just only be defined if we have a system of reference of space and time. If we take away space and take away time, we have no more matter. We can't conceive of any matter without first having the mental concept of space and time. And therefore we can see how matter is just a concept and not something that exists per se, because it's dependent that we first accept the concept that there is time and that there is space. But as you know, since already nearly 50 years that Einstein has shown that there is no absolute space and no absolute time, and that space and time are just human conventions which we have introduced in order to have a system of coordinates into which we can place everything. So it's a human concept, time and space. Ideas are not dependent on time, and they are not dependent on space. They cannot be placed within the time concept. They cannot be placed within a space concept. We cannot say an idea happens at this and this time, and we cannot say an idea has its place here and there. It's like 2 times 2 is spaceless, is timeless. It's a fact that is beyond the question of time and space. My word. You know, if we begin to think in terms of God and his ideas, and really see that this has nothing to do with time and space, can you see that this is overcoming death? It's overcoming death in 2 ways. It's overcoming death in a time sense, that we don't have any more the feeling there is now and then. That's death, that we say, now we live, and afterwards we are dead. It overcomes also death in another way, in a space sense, namely that we think we live in a space somewhere, at a place in space, and therefore have an entity there, and afterwards we are no more there. If we lose the sense of space, then we see we are everywhere at all time, and then we lose the everywhere and the all time, we lose that and say it's idea. An idea has neither space nor time. I just feel all the time, since it's a funny thing, since about 20, 25 years, I always felt that somehow Christian Science in general is disorientated, that it tries to solve their problem on the wrong basis, like death, trying to solve how to overcome death, trying to overcome the death of a body, whereas the fundamental question is idea, to see that idea has never had a body, is never living in a time and in a space concept, and that if we would tackle these questions right at the root of everything, namely to see that nothing exists, not even the body, not even we exist. All what exists are God and his ideas. That's what is the teaching of Mrs. Eddy, and naturally everybody has the right not to accept the teaching of Mrs. Eddy. But when they accept the teaching of Mrs. Eddy, they should be consistent in it and say, okay, then there is actually nothing going on but principle and its idea, and the idea has neither body, has neither time, has neither space, so there is no overcoming of death, because we have never, then we see that we have never been born into time and space. I always felt that overcoming death means to overcome the belief in birth. If we overcome the belief in birth, and birth means, where have we been before? Have we been before in another body, in time and space? Or can we see that all that is made by the word of God? Can we see that there is only one principle of the universe, timeless, spaceless, and that that spiritual principle of the universe is bringing forth nothing else but its own idea of principle, and that idea has no space, no time? Then I feel I can tackle the belief in death. But always to try and see, oh, here I am. Golly, will I make it or will I not make it? And thinking, oh, Mrs. Eddy didn't make it. What a pity she didn't make it. Huh? See, naturally, the moment you equate idea and Mrs. Eddy, you have started from the wrong places. What she brought is not Mrs. Eddy. What she brought is the idea of Christian Science. And that idea of Christian Science had no birth, therefore no death. And so the whole question, should he have overcome death or not, is just the wrong question. It's an insignificant question. The idea she was living for and working for was something completely different, to show that there is no beginning. If there is no beginning, there is no end. And my word, she showed that there is no beginning. That all there is a divine principle. Therefore, she said, is this a creation, or is it not more a revelation? She did away with the sense of creation and lifted it up right to the point of, isn't it a revelation? And the revelation doesn't need to be saved from death. So let's see the simplicity of her teaching, which shows that if we see idea, we find the answer to the question, what is matter? See, an idea is, as we have seen, infinitely dimensional, and matter is three-dimensional. So if we see idea in its infinite dimensionality, we give an answer to matter. But to try to fight down that matter with any other way, in any other way, just not even when we see that matter is a subjective state of mortal mind, it's not enough, because we only trace it back to mortal mind. That's not enough. We can't solve it just that way. It's the first step. Then when we see it's just mortal mind, we say, now what are we going to do with mortal mind? And we have to go a step further and say, well, mortal mind is only divine mind misunderstood. So I have to understand divine mind. And I understand divine mind, as Mrs. Eddy said, through the ideas which expresses mind. And I come right back to mind and its ideas. And that's the answer to matter. Further, I think what we must see about the nature of idea is that ideas are self-conscious. And this is important because then we don't have a feeling that we must make the ideas conscious of what they have to do, of how they should operate, when and where they should operate, for what purpose they should operate. If we can see that ideas, because they are ideas of truth, they are infinitely conscious of their own ideational nature, then we let the idea work the way it works, because we know the idea knows itself as what it is. But if we only have a sense an idea is something there, a substantialistic sense of it, then we feel we have to give to that idea direction and guidance. We have to give to that idea consciousness. And then we put all our human mentality into it. Whereas if we see an idea is an idea of truth, and truth is the divine consciousness, then we see that each idea that comes to us, whatever that idea is, knows how to operate, what to achieve, is conscious of itself, and we just can watch how that idea operates. I remember John Dolly saying in the class something very simple. He said, God knows himself, ideas know themselves. Because idea knows themselves, they know God. Therefore, all that there is God knowing himself. Just made that circle, that cybernetic circle, seeing that God knows himself, idea knows themselves, and because ideas know themselves, they know God. And that's the big thing, that the idea know God. And therefore, all that there is God knowing himself. Well, just when you take up that point, that the idea knows God, because the principle and idea is one, then we must see this thing, which I feel is super important too. Namely, that an idea, or all ideas, are actually what? They are the operation of God himself. Ideas are the way God operates. God is, so to say, the noumenon, ideas, the phenomena of that noumenon. And so God is not just a big amorphous whole, but it's a very structured whole, and so every aspect of that whole is an operation of that whole. And this is important to see, that we don't think that ideas are parts of that whole, but that they are always the whole. And what is the conclusion from it? The conclusion from it is that, for instance, you can see, if you go through the seven synonymous terms, as far as you already know them, that you can see, look here, what is the bigness of an idea? Why is an idea infinite? And you could say, see, that for instance, the idea of mind, characterizing mind like power, she would show that the power of an idea is what? That the power of the idea is the power of the infinite. It's not just a sense of power. It's the power of the infinite. So you can always couple back the idea to its principle, because principle and idea is one. Therefore, qualitatively, every idea is the idea of the infinite. And so every idea has the quality of the infinite. So the power of an idea is the power of the infinite. Or you take spirit and you see that the substance of an idea. What is the substance of an idea, we ask? What is that substance? And if we want to give a right answer, we just must say, well, the substance of an idea is the substance of the whole infinite. It's never smaller than the infinite. See, in the spiritual realm, we can never divide. In the realm of the material, they have tried to do that, to divide matter into molecules into atoms into electrons and protons and neutrons, then the neutrons and the protons into another 100 other particles, and then divide, until they find out it's a wrong question. And in the spiritual, you cannot even start that way. You can never take the infinite and divide it up. Divide mind into minds, spirit into spirits, soul into souls, principle into principles. We cannot do that. Life into lives. We always see that the idea of mind is always the whole of mind. That the idea of spirit is always the whole of spirit. So that the idea of soul, like the blessing of an idea, is always the blessing of the infinite. There is not a small blessing in something. That doesn't exist. In the spiritual, in the realm of the idea, there is never a small blessing. Because you cannot divide the infinite into parts, into smallness. The authority of an idea is always the authority of the infinite principle. The life of an idea is always the life of the infinite. The truth of an idea, the health of an idea, is always the health of the infinite. You can't have a little bit of health. There is never a little bit of anything in the spiritual. It's always the whole. The promise of an idea, love, is always the promise of the infinite. It's never a small promise. Never. We shouldn't live with a small promise. The human sense in us is very hard on us and says, do you have any hope? Is there any promise in this? And tries to belittle it and narrow it down and limit it. Whereas when we see that every idea is the idea of the infinite, we have the promise of the infinite. Can you see the bigness of ideas? The bigness of the idea is always the bigness of the infinite. And you can realize that what Mrs. Eddy brought is so new, because it breaks with the whole traditional education of the classical world, starting with the Greeks and going right up to our schooling, which is always thinking in the whole and in parts, the whole and its parts. We are educated and miseducated from the Greeks, from the time of the Greeks. Before the Greeks, they had much more that sense that they were one with the whole, that they were woven into the whole. They were never thinking as parts, so to say, but always as being interwoven into the whole of being. And with the Greeks came that question of dividing. And our whole attitude, you just check yourself once during an hour or during a day, that whatever we think always in parts. We think a part of the whole. No matter if we think about politics or about chemistry or about mathematics, about whatever we think, you will always find out that we think in little parts of the whole. And this has to be broken. That's what Mrs. Eddy came here to say. I kick all that old classical Greek philosophy in the pens and say, get out, get away from it, get away from it. Take in the oneness of being and begin to think in oneness, even if you think in aspects, in characteristics of that one, but always think that those characteristics are always characteristics of the one. And it takes a completely new orientation of our consciousness and the watching over our consciousness over years and years to free ourselves from that traditional old belief. So that finally we always think in the concept of the infinite one, no matter if we think of ideas. Because ideas, the nature of idea, is the nature of the infinite one. And that naturally frees us tremendously, because every time, say, an idea comes to us, the human concept enters in and says, oh yes, this is a new idea, but it's small. Will it grow? Will it unfold? Will it gather identity? Will it have power? Will it have authority? Will it last? Will it have a promise? Will it stand the strain? The human concept comes right in because it is used to think in tiny little parts. And so every idea, especially when we say a small idea or a little idea came, which we should never say, we feel it so tiny that it may not be able to stand the opposition. If we would train ourselves into the right consciousness of science, we would see, oh, here is a new idea. And see, what is idea? Idea is the idea of the infinite, and therefore would give right to that idea the qualities of the infinite, and say, I welcome this idea. That idea is born of the divine mind. Therefore, that idea has the intelligence of the divine mind. It has the power of the divine mind. It has the substance of the whole spirit. It has the identity and the unchangeability of soul. It has the authority of principle, the government of principle. It has the life of the one life, of the one being. It has the health and form of the whole of being, of truth. It has the promise and the fulfillment of the one infinite one. Then we would see that idea as the idea of the infinite and stay with it. Can you see the new consciousness that is presented when we look at Mrs. Eddy's textbook in a scientific way? How many minutes have I left? All right, just a few minutes. That gives me a chance just quickly to show you how the term idea develops in a big line through the Christian Science textbook. You know that fundamentally we see that chapter 1 to 16, which forms the main body of the textbook, that those 16 chapters are showing first through four chapters the Word, then the next four chapters of Christ, and the next four chapters Christianity, and the last four chapters science, according to the four sides of the Holy City. And so, how is the idea presented in the first four chapters? Actually, she uses the term idea only a very few times. In prayer she doesn't use it, in marriage she doesn't use it, and it's only here and there in the chapter Tome and Eucharist that she uses it, and then in spiritualism a few times. And all what she wants to bring out first is that we should get the idea of God as the only reality. So you have that, to get the idea of God as the only reality. In the second four chapters, giving the Christ, she just goes one little step further and shows really that all that matters is really idea, and that matter doesn't really matter. But all that matters is idea, and that therefore matter cannot bring forth idea. Then she goes to the next four chapters on Christianity and changes the accent again and says, you know, every idea is really an idea in God. That the quality of an idea is the quality of God. And shows that the idea is always in God, therefore that man is the true idea of God, because he is in God, and that mortals, therefore, are not the idea of God. Can you see that third four chapters have a sense of focusing the nature of idea as being an idea in God. But when she comes to the last four chapters, then she expands it terrifically. Then it is as if she would now show, look here, all what I was driving at is to see the nature of idea. And so, especially in the chapter on recapitulation, she shows principle and idea is one, and shows that relationship of principle and idea to be indestructible, inseparable, so that really the idea is always the idea of its principle. And then, in Genesis, she shows that this idea unfolds forever, unfolds infinitely. What does it mean that it unfolds infinitely? And then she comes to that 16th chapter and shows what infinity means. Infinite in every way and shape and form. She says, see, there she begins to show that the idea, which is always one with its principle, is one with its principle as well in the divine as in the human. And that there is nothing going on in the divine and in the human but the idea. That there is no red dragon going on, no seven vials full of the last plagues going on. It's only the idea going on. The true idea of whatever constitutes the kingdom of heaven in man is going on, she says there, and brings harmony to earth. That the idea puts matter under her feet. That the idea is crowned with 12 stars, with the demonstration. 12 is a symbol of demonstration. That the idea is clad with spiritual truth. You see, that the idea has everything what truth has, what God has. That it shows the working of the spiritual idea. How does it work? It rules all nations and all peoples. It baptizes with fire, with destroys. Huh? The idea begins now to destroy what needs to be destroyed. That the idea rises to the zenith of demonstration. That it guides all right desires. Comes right to the human and says, even in the human I guide all right desires. It casts out the red dragon. The idea reveals the kingdom of God within you. And finally it says, all right, the material human sense must yield to the infinite principle and to the infinite idea. And then she closes it. Can you see the terrific magnitude of idea that is brought out in that chapter, which has no boundary? It's really gives them all the multidimensional sense of idea. Good.